Today on True Friend with Corey Montel Scott.
I don't know why you're going up there calling you believe in him. If he was so real, why he got you in this situation? So saying stuff like that. No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was locked in. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of True Friend with Corey Montel Scott. Now, if you want to stay up to date on future episodes, make sure you click that subscribe button down below. Today, we have somebody who, even if you don't know him by name, I'm sure you have seen some of his productions like I have. He's a native of Woodleaf, North Carolina. He's a playwright. He's a director. He's a producer. He's a writer. He's worked with pretty much anybody you can think of, from Clifton Powell, Jack A. Harry, Patrice Lovely, the late Tommy Ford, and so forth and so on. And that is none other than Mr. Donald Gray.
How you doing?
How are you? It's so good to have you on the show today.
I am doing great, and thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, I like to allow each guest to say in their own words who they believe they are. So I'm going to ask you, who is Donald Gray, and how would you define yourself to someone who has never met or heard of you before?
Donald Gray is a humbled playwright, director, actor. I've been in this industry for several years. I'm very passionate about what I do. I take the arts and I take the craft very serious. And through it, all of the productions, my main goal is being able to inspire someone and encourage someone and allowing someone in the ministry to be drawn and lifted from anything that they may be going through. That's my ministry.
And, you know, just to kind of name off some of the shows, The Man of Her Dreams, which we saw the actress who played Ronnie on The Players Club.
Christelle Wilson.
Yeah. The Players Club. And also All the Queen's Men. Fantastic actress. Yes. And There's a Stranger in My House with Tamika Scott of Escape and Vivica Fox.
Yes.
You've had over 15 years of experience writing and directing, acting in stage plays. The scene has changed so much during that time. So as a playwright, what is your creative process like? How do you stay creative?
Well, pretty much you want to kind of write and tap into what's going on in society or the world, basically as it is. Certain things that may go on within relationships that you talk to friends and loved ones and they pick up and tell you different things. So from what my creativity is, just staying within the loop of what's actually happening so that people and viewers can be able to identify with what's taking place on stage.
This market, the Black stage play market, has been something that has been really around since probably, I want to say, the 90s is when it really started to take off with people such as David E. Talbert. And of course, you know, the popular one is Tyler Perry. What do you feel like separates you and makes you different from those other playwrights?
I don't really think that it's anything that makes me different or separates me from them, because a lot of times, of course, they are directors, producers of great work, which both of them I idol and truly respect. So I don't so much see it being different, but I think that we're all tapping into putting things out that's very creative and very well put together, and not just putting anything out. And if anything, that's what I stem from them, is to make sure that whatever you do and you're putting out is of quality.
But it doesn't just stop there. You know, your gifts have seen you're an actor, and you know, we hear the director and the playwright, but we're not just going to skip over the acting. Years ago, I remember watching Soul Kitten's Cabaret. With Nikki Gilbert and Fantasia, Faith Evans, Terrell Carter. Yeah. You were actually one of the actors in that. Talk to us about how that came to be, working with Nikki Gilbert and her brainchild, which is Soul Kitten's Cabaret.
Wow, that was truly an honor. I was not scheduled to be in that. But what had happened was, the week of the show, the gentleman that was playing, I played the character of Frank Rutter. And the gentleman that was presently booked to play Frank Rutter actually had fallen and broke his leg.
Oh, no.
And so this was basically only 2 days away from the actual filming of it. And so, of course, to my understanding, Miss Gilbert, a lot of them, the film producers were in awe. What are we going to do? We're 2 days out from the show. And who are we going to get that's going to be able to, number one, remember these lines in 2 days? Number two, be able to come in and learn the blocking. And so, to my understanding, Christal Wilson, who had worked with me various times, raised her hand and says, I know someone.
Wow.
Said, let me send him a text and see if he's available. And said that if he's available and open, he will be able to do exactly what you're looking for. So I'm just honored that she would even mention my name in the room. And it kind of goes with the old saying that sometimes people will mention your name in rooms that you're not even in. And so that, of course, made me think of that. And so I'm very grateful to her. I'm very grateful to Nikki Gilbert and the film producers for whom at that time heard of me but never met me or worked with me. So I'm grateful to them for taking Christal's word and trusting me.
It speaks volumes of your character, because Keisha Knight Pulliam, who's also not been afraid to use your name in interviews and different things.
Oh,
so what
wow.
does that feel like, that these people that we've watched growing up, they're icons in Black cinema, Black TV, and Black theater, speaking of your works and what you mean to the acting community?
Wow. It is truly, like, words cannot express it. I am truly grateful. It's something that I don't take lightly or take for granted. But I've always just been the type of person. My real mom passed away when I was 6 months old. So I was raised by my grandparents. And people always say, well, once they talk to me or meet me, they say, well, it makes sense. Once they found out that I was raised by my grandparents, they say, well, it makes sense now, because we can sense and hear and feel that old spirit. And so it makes me feel good that Keisha Knight, whom I worked with, she was on tour with me, and my first time ever working with her. And I just believe that whatever structure you have, it can't change up because you're working with different people. And I never forget that we were on tour, and I was just, I'm like you, we grew up, we've been watching Rudy on the Cosby. And so to work with her and now be directing her, I was timid in giving her directions. So in other words, when I would give everybody else their directions, I would always say, Keisha, when she played the character of Shania, I would always say either Shania or Keisha, great job. And so after rehearsal one day, she says, Director Gray, that's what most of them call me, Director Gray, can I speak with you briefly after rehearsal? Because, well, of course, I said yes. I didn't know what she was going to say. So everyone else, I dismissed. Everyone else had left. It was only she and I in the rehearsal room. And she says, Director Gray, she says, I noticed that after rehearsals or during the rehearsals, you give everybody notes and nuggets, is what I like to call them. You give everybody notes and nuggets but me. And she says, I want some of those nuggets too. And so she went on and told me, she says, I've worked with Mr. Cosby, and she says, my parents paid me degrees and paid thousands and thousands of dollars. And this is literally what Keisha Knight shared with me to my face. She says, but what I've learned from you and got from you in these last 2 months of us touring, the money that has been spent, or the knowledge that I got from spending the money, is not of value as to what I'm getting from you. You have a way of, she called me a actor's director. She says actors love you because you're a hands-on director. They won't ask any question that you can't explain because you do your homework. You don't come in, you don't have the yelling at the actors mentality, but you're passionate with the actors, and the actors want to do for you because they can feel and sense your passion. So it's just an honor, and Keisha is the very reason. Like right now, I tour and I do acting workshops. I've done them all over. And she's the reason that I do that, because she told me, she says, "Director Gray, do you do acting workshops?" And I said, "Nah," I said, "I'm just sticking to the plays." And she said, "Director Gray," she says, "take it from me, someone that has been in the industry." She says that it's so many of us that can be impacted from your technique and your style. She says, not even like me, people that are seasoned, whatever, all of this. And so it's just really been grateful for that, for her to speak of me, for Cristal to mention my name in a room. And again, character is very, very important to me. What you see in rehearsals, what you see there is what you get. You know, I'm not no all over the place type of person. When I'm in these cities, I'm going to go to rehearsal. I'm going to come back. And like, if I panned over here to the left of my Airbnb, you would see scripts all on the table, because the Bible speaks and says that you have to study to show yourself approved. So I don't, if someone calls me to direct a play or be in a play, I don't take that lightly, because I feel like there's tons of other people that they could have called and chosen. But if they called me, I am committed to do 100% of what I can.
Just even from interacting and hearing you speak, I can see why they would have those words about you. I mean, you're very, very thorough in what it is that you're saying. I want you to speak to the people who wear a lot of hats, you know, the writers, actors, producers, directors. There have been times where you have had to flip those hats off, where you've had to be the actor to somebody else's director. Or if we look at The Man of Her Dreams, you wrote that, but Clifton Powell directed. How do you respectfully wear the hat that you're wearing while also not disrespecting the other people who are involved? Talk to those people who struggle with that.
Okay. I'm a very humbled person. Therefore, I think of a saying that says, everybody can't be chiefs. You need some Indians. And so I look at that cliche. And even though now I directed Man of a Dreams on the tour with Shirley Murdoch again, Cristal Wilson, Tamika Scott, Clifton Powell. So I directed it on the tour. And even though I felt like I could have done for the film and for the television, the film producers felt like, because Mr. Powell had experience of years of experience in television, movie, and films, that he could build it or get it to where it needed to be from a film production standpoint. And so that's how that came about. So of course, when they call me into the room, knowing that I had been directing it for the whole tour, and knowing that it was my play, when they call me into the room, again, I instantly thought of that saying that, you know, everybody can't be chiefs. You know, you need some Indians, you know, to make up the tribe. And so with that, I was humbled, you know, to say, okay.
I mean, it's the great Clifton Powell, mm-hmm. who has played so many roles. Woman Thou Art Loose, Menace to Society. And the list goes on and on with Mr. Clifton Powell. So I think that's great. Yeah. I think that's commendable. Being humble is not an easy thing for some. So the fact that you know, was your initial take, that speaks volumes. How do you go about choosing which plays and roles to partake in? So, like, have you ever been offered or accepted a role that didn't exactly align with your beliefs? How do you reconcile the differences between your characters that you play and who you are as a believer?
I do what I request whenever I get or am called for a production, whether it's to direct, whether it's to play a role. Of course, my first thing, and I learned my lesson with that, because at first I was so passionate about it. If you called me to do it, you were just going to get an automatic yes. And so I've learned my lesson in that. And so I refrain from that to, of course, doing something that I should have been doing from the beginning and just requesting to read the script in its entirety, seeing what that that character in take or whatever the case may be. So that's pretty much I pretty much read through it. I haven't been given a script that has went totally opposite. Now the hardest thing sometimes is, like, because I started out with Good Man Is Hard to Find as playing Dice the drug dealer years ago with David Payton, people stereotype me as the bad guy. So what happens is, a lot of times over the course of the years, I would just get casted for the villains or the drug dealers or the mean dad or the mean brother and all of this. And so with that, I have never gotten a role that I would say the biggest thing. What hurts for me is the challenging thing is, like, say, for instance, when I'm playing those rebellious characters, sometimes those characters, I don't know why you go to church anyway. I don't know why you going up there calling you believe in him. If he was so real, why he got you in this situation? So saying stuff like that, no.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was locked in.
I didn't mean to go there.
But that pretty much would be the only challenge that I have. I haven't been given any type of roles that would have me do anything that, you know, is more, say, like what I say and what I face more is those characters, because I play more rebellious, seem like. But here in my older age, people are now, like, once they meet me, like, I play a lot of the pastor roles and things of that nature, or the more encouraging role. And that's kind of where I'm at now. But years ago and over the course of the years, I was stereotyped as that drug dealer, that gangster, that head drug dealer, all that.
So with all those, though, is there a role in your head that you feel like was the most influential, or something that, you know, you're very proud of? When you got through with the run of it, you were able to reflect and say, I'm proud of what I was able to do with this character.
Mm. Wow. So, yes, I would have to say that was A Good Man Is Hard to Find, written, directed by the late David Payton, where I played Dice. This particular play, and it was so ironic, and a lot of people don't know this, but David Payton was the one that gave me my first opportunity. What it was, by me being from the Cleveland, Salisbury area, Woodleaf area, I would always do, years ago, I would do one man skits, because my goal was to reach the young people. I used to work as a counselor at the Cleveland YMCA. And so there I would attend, you know, the summer camp after school. And so I gravitated to the younger people, the teenagers. And so I would just kind of see different things that these young people were just dealing with and going through. And it was just surprising for their age. So I started doing a one-man skit called Say No to Drugs. And so what I started doing, I would do them at high schools and middle schools in Salisbury, the area. I would do them in Charlotte. And so what happened was the Channel 3 News in Salisbury got whiffed of it, and they came out to one of the schools, and they did David Wisnett. I never forget the reporter, David Wisnett of Channel 3 News in Salisbury, came out, did a story. And now, in the process of him doing the story, the Charlotte Observer got permission from them if they could pull that same story. And the Charlotte Observer did it as a front page story. young black African-American guy, travels to different high schools, middle schools, doing a one-man skit, Say No to Drugs for young people, and doesn't charge a dime. And so, of course, when they put that on the front page of Charlotte Observer, well, you know how when you go into hotels, those papers are on the counter of most hotels. So as David Payton, the writer, and his whole Good Man crew was coming in, they were on their way, I think, I can't remember if it was D.C., from way down in Miami. So they stopped in Charlotte to what used to be the old McDonald's Inn Theater, or not theater, hotel on Bates Ford Road. So they stopped in there just for that night to stay, and then get up the next morning and continue moving into Washington, D.C. So as they're checking in, they're reading, he's reading the paper on the front page story, And so he just started to talk about, man, wow, I would really love to meet this dude. And so you got to be careful what you ask for. And the particular young lady that was managing that hotel at that time was Sandra Cornelius, which is now Sandra Cornelius Steele. And so basically, well, little now because she's married, but she was managing, and she was best friends with my sister. So when Mr. Payton made that statement, he says, if I had a chance to meet this dude, do y'all read this passion that this young man has? And, you know, how's he going from these different places? And he's not charging a dime. He's spending his own money. He says, man, if I had the opportunity, I would audition this guy, and I believe he's good, and I would give him an opportunity. So Sandra, managing that night, heard him, and she said, excuse me, Mr. Payton, what was that? And he going on talking about the rooms and what they needed. She says, no, not about the rooms. I got you. I'm working on the rooms, you know, but what were you referring to about this article? And so he in turn said it again. So she says, so you mean to tell me that if I could get this young man down here tonight, you would audition him and possibly give him an opportunity? And he says, yes, not knowing that she says, well, I'm best friends with his sister. I know him. I know his family. Now, take it. This is around 12 o'clock midnight. And so she says, well, I'm going to call right now. I'm going to call his sister, and I'm going to tell his sister and see where he's at, and tell him to come down. So, of course, this was years ago. And so, of course, my sister came in. She says, Donald, she says, Sandra just called me, and David Payton of A Good Man Is Hard to Find, the whole cast are in Charlotte at McDonald's Inn, and he wants to audition you. So 12 o'clock at night, I said, come on, sis, I'm not about to go no Charlotte. You talking about go to Charlotte? I'm not about to go no Charlotte. And so I rolled over, whatever, went back to sleep. Here she come again. Donald, I just feel like you need to get up and go. This, you know, things don't happen for a reason. You know, things happen for a reason. So turn over again. I'm not going. So she says, I tell you what. She says, if I drive you, would you go? And I just now at this point just, okay, get up, whatever, throw on a sweatsuit, whatever, go get down there. Because you know, from Woodleaf to Charlotte, you got a good hour or more. So by the time we got there, it might have been about 1:15, 1:30 a.m. And so I said, now, you mean to tell me it's 1 something in the morning, this man going to be sitting up waiting on me to come audition? No sooner than we got there, around 1:30 a.m., Miss Sandra was at the front desk. And so she was like, they're in the conference room. Showed me where the conference room was. And when I went in, there was Mr. David Payton, the writer, and it was the director. And so he spoke to me in reference of what he had read and you know, what that meant to him. And he says that I would just like for you to audition for me, and I might have something for you. And so of course, you want to know if they want you to do an improv. Improv is something that you make up, or did they want to give you a script for you to read? So he did both. He gave me the script for Dice, And then he asked me to do an improv, and he asked me, did I sing? And so once I'd done all three of those things, it was just like, thank you very much. I appreciate you. So I'm like, you mean tell me I done came down all this way? And like, I'm ready for like, look, we appreciate you coming. You got it, whatever. So I'm like, okay. So I'm as humble. I go on back to the car. Thanks, Sandra. And sister, go ahead back. We go get home. And the very next morning, around maybe 9 a.m., I got a call from him and says, Donald said, I'm doing a Christmas play, and I want you to play Peter, the leading role. I says, what? I says, okay. So here it is, you know. So I'm, of course, I'm thinking, okay, well, I thought I was coming and going to get something for A Good Man Is Hard to Find, because that was going on tour and everything like that. But here you go, humble. So you be grateful, because God has to bless you, see how you react and deal with little things before he blesses you with bigger things sometimes. So I was humble. I says, all right, well, thank you so much. I said, I'll play it, whatever. So I played it. I played the role, and he asked me the next night. He says, I want your family to come as guests tomorrow night. I says, okay. I says, well, okay. I just really want your family. Make sure your family come. We're going to give them comp tickets. So my family came, and during at the end of the show, he spoke about the article. He spoke about how he met me. And he says that I wanted his family to come tonight because A Good Man Is Hard to Find in January. This was around November, 1st of December, when I did the play. And he says, the beginning of the year, A Good Man Is Hard to Find, we're going on a 6-month tour. And he says that I requested him to invite his family because he's not aware of this until now. But we want to hire Donald Gray and take him on tour and to be a part of A Good Man Is Hard to Find as Dice. And I just started crying, and I was like, wow, you know. And so again, like I said, not even knowing at that time, when he offered me the do the role of Peter, something just said, just remain humble, you know, because that was a step up from what I was doing anyway, because I was just doing the one man skits, you know. And so I would have to say David Payton, because now he took me all over the country. My first tour, my first date, never been on a big stage like that at all. And the first city we had was New York on Broadway at the Beacon Theater. And I was in awe to pull up there and see the busloads of people and all the limousines and stuff pull. Like, I was just kind of blown away. I'm like, here I am, this little country boy. A month ago, I couldn't even see this, you know. And so it would have to be David Payton, because he believed in me, and he gave me that opportunity. And so from that, I'm always is always in my heart, like, you know, I'm not going to let myself down. And number one, I'm not going to let God down. But there's a part of me that says David entrusted me, and I ain't going to let him down.
That is such an amazing and God ordained and God orchestrated story.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't even know the actual story of how I got started, but that's actually how I got started. And then when he gave me the role of Dice was only in two scenes in the whole play, in a whole 2-hour something play. He was only in two scenes. And if you add up the minutes, and this is what I want to say to actors out there, if you added up the minutes that Dice was in those two scenes, he probably was in a total of 5 minutes in that whole 2-hour play. Well, most people would have been upset and says, man, I want more lines, or I think my acting is on this level and I can play this. Why are you going to give me this little bit? But here it is. I remember my granddaddy always says that whatever little you get, you treat that little like it's a lot. And I embellished those 5 minutes. And David Payton called me one time into his office when we was on the road. And he said, Donald, he says, I want you to look at these papers, because he would do a evaluation from city, New York, L.A. and Washington. He would do a survey as people are leaving, saying, what was your most memorable scene in Good Man? What was your most memorable character in Good Man? And he showed me the papers to see that most of these people said Dice.
Wow.
And I'm saying, and that's when it really hit me. I was worried at first, I'm only doing 5 minutes, but now wherever we would go, people would say the most memorable character and scene in this play was the scenes with Dice. So that assured me that it's not, don't make me preach on here, but it assured me that it's not how long you do it, but it's how effective you do it. And see, a lot of actors and writers, they want to think, well, I got to write this play. Well, I'm on my 20th play. I ain't even on my 20th play, and I've been doing it for years, but it's not, a lot of people get it mixed up and think that it's in the quantity of what you do, in the quantity of how much you do, but it's the quality of how you do it. I'd rather do one with quality than do 10 with none. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to preach. I wasn't supposed to get on here and preach.
Yes, you were. No, for real. This is gold, because creative's not just in the playwright community, but even, you know, in music or other arenas, yes, can sometimes get a big head and you don't understand, yes, that, you know, this is what's assignment and how God is working all the things together for their good. So the fact that you were
so true,
faithful and a good steward over those 5 minutes, and to see how God has multiplied, yes, that over these past 15 years is remarkable, and it's a true, yes, testament to anybody who's thinking about getting into this and what it really takes. And because I could think of 10 people right now that would have heard them 5 minutes and said, no, thank you, I pass. So
me too.
that I thank you so much for sharing that with the audience. What can you tell us about your upcoming role in the royal family?
Oh wow. This is an honor. The Royal Family is written by a good friend of mine, Princeton Eccles. He's a native of Coldwater, Mississippi. I met him in Atlanta. He was living in Atlanta a couple years ago, and he was in a play that I was directing there. And so we crossed paths about 7 years ago. And so he started doing the play. He asked me to come in and direct it for him then. And so came in. And so I'm doing the same thing. So we're bringing it back after 6 years. I'm the co-director with him. He called me his mentor, but I am so grateful for this young man. And it's good when you can take young writers up under your wing and you can really see them elevate. And even now, for me to sit in rehearsal and him give them notes and things of this nature, and I'm even like Keisha Knight was with me, like, I want you to give me notes. This is your vision, this is your play. So I play the role of Pastor Elijah King. And so Pastor Elijah King is one of these pastors that, you know, a lot of pastors today, you call a PK kid. And so he is pretty rough on his son. He feels like his son basically is in the R&B world. And so that doesn't really set good with Pastor King. Pastor King feels that he didn't raise his son up in that lifestyle. But what the story unveils is, a lot of the animosity and stuff that pastor is showing is he remembers how his father had him out there and things that he experienced that he's never told to anybody until the end of this play. So once Pastor King tells that, now people understand his harshness toward his son. And as we say in the play, and it doesn't have to be so harsh. A lot of times, you know, PK kids go through certain things. And what I learned as Pastor King is it's not really what you saying, but it's how you saying it. And we as church folk, we just, you know, church folk, we would just feel like we could just say what we want. And at the same time, but you know, it's not necessarily so much as to what we say as to how we, say it. And that's one thing. And Pastor King has to realize that throughout the course of that play. But I'm just delighted to be here. The singers, the actors, oh my, it's phenomenal. It's phenomenal.
Before you head out, what I want to know is we've heard your heart and we've heard your spirit. I want to have you speak to other creatives, the ones who not only are having to work with maybe their own egos, working with other egos. Maybe they are working with an actor that may not be so humble and they don't know how to approach that, how to make it work for the whole dream to work. Talk to those creatives.
Yes, I think, and I have dealt with both. I have worked with some actors that the ego, and I wouldn't want to call any names, but the egos were a little bigger than the others. But what I would say to these creatives, You have to remain yourself. You can't let their arrogantness or anger or the way they talk embellish your vision, embellish your character. And I'll never forget this. And I think I can say this. Years ago, we was getting ready for Man of a Dreams, which Jack A. Harry from 227, the late, AJ Johnson, that was Ezell on Friday. We were getting ready for the tour, and some people had sit me down or called me. They say, "Man, Donald, man, say, I hear you got AJ and Jack A in your show." And I says, "Yeah." I says, "I'm looking forward to it." I says, "You know, I never worked with them. I'm looking forward to it." And they was like, "Well, you be careful." I said, "Well, what do you mean, be careful?" They say, "Well, a lot of stuff that you that you know stand for, they might not stand for. Your rehearsal schedule and things of this nature, they may not, you know, because some people don't feel like they have to rehearse as much, or they have more experience. So why am I doing all of this?" So they never said anything over the top or bad. And so I just knew that regardless, I had to continue through the process to be Donald. And so basically, maybe we rehearsed for 3 months before we took Man of the Dreams out, and different people were calling me, "You didn't had any trouble?" I said, "No." I said, "You ain't had no trouble?" I said, "No. Have they? They ain't been in all the rehearsals, have they?" "Yeah, they've been in all the rehearsals." they done left out of some of the rehearsals. "No, they stayed to the end." "What? But come on, man, you gotta be lying." I said, "No, they stayed to the end. I haven't had no issues or whatever." And so one night after rehearsal, we went to eat, and it just so happened that left in the restaurant was, I was at a table and they were at another table, because everybody else had done got up, you know, from the restaurant downstairs of the hotel. So it just so happened that us three were the only three that was left. So I goes over, you know, and I just say, because here it is, a lot of people want to always have to feel like they got to always tell people what somebody said. You know what I'm saying? But you don't have to do that. You don't have to do that. So all I did is went over, knowing what these people had told me. All I went and says, "Look, I just want to let both of y'all know that it's an honor for y'all to be in this play, for me to work with both of y'all. I saw y'all work. You know, I'm a fan of your work, and I just want to thank y'all for being a part and everything. I ain't say nothing about what nobody told me or nothing. And you know what they said, Director Gray, you said you got a minute? I said, yeah. I said, I got a minute. They say, have a seat. They says to me, it's not that we aren't whatever, you know, we've worked in a lot of plays. This is what they telling me to verify what these people said. We've been in a lot of plays, and sometimes we don't really want to stay for the whole rehearsal. Sometimes, you know, we don't even want to go. They says, because they says, but we want to thank you. I said, what do you want to thank me for? They said, because we're used to working with writers and directors that are very arrogant. And sometimes the way that these writers and directors talk to us would make us feel like you're not about to talk to me this kind of way, because my name is what's getting people in the seats at your place. So you're not going to talk to me any kind of way. So this is what they now telling me to verify what I had been told, even without me having to say a word as to what they said. And they says, now you go to these plays. This is what Mr. Johnson was saying. You go to these plays and these writers, they coming in their gator shoes and they tailor-made suits or whatever, and all the jewelry on or whatever, and got their head up all in the air. And they says, but you come with a whole different humbleness. They said you come with a whole nother humbleness. And so that's what they basically said, is that we have to give you 110% because we can see your heart. When you talk in that rehearsal, we hear your heart. We hear your passion. We see how you do it. You don't come off arrogant. You don't come off arrogant. You know, and I'll never forget, we were going through the airport. Ralph Tresvant from New Edition was a part of that play. And I'll never forget, we were going up to our gate, and everybody was recognizing Music Soul Child. There go Music Soul Child. There go Ralph Tresvant. Whatever. And so I done went in, and I'm sitting. I'm normally like the last one walking up, and I just go on over there and sit. And next thing I know, Ralph Tresvant says, hey, great. Come in for a minute. Went up to the counter where the lady was, and Mr. Tresvant says, this is the writer and the director, and says, but you're not going to never know it. Said, because some writers and directors going to make you know who they are. They want to be in the front of the line. They going to be very loud, you know, but Ralph is telling the lady there at the gate or whatever, you know, and says that this is the writer and the director, but you would never know it based off of his character, because he's going to sit quiet, you know, and that's just always been me. So I would just say, back to your question, is regardless of what you're dealing with, you gotta remain to be true to yourself and true to who you are. And I'm just a firm believer, what God has for me will be for me. If it's for me to work with them again, I'll work with them again. There may be times that I see where, you know, man, this didn't really go that well, but it's still not going to cause me to go out of my character during that time. But it may say, okay, well, next time when I'm sitting here going through my cast list, I may just not add this person, you know.
Listen, I thank you so much for coming on and sharing all that you shared.
Thank you for having me.
I want you to tell people about your other projects, Collateral Damage, Love and Circumstances, and where they can find you.
All right. So listen, October, I'll be in Collateral Damage. This is written by none other than Johnny Sizemore from the Spartanburg area, Showtime Productions. And we'll be a part of that production coming up in October. And then in November, the Lord is blessing us. We will be going to be a part of Mooney Productions in Stockton, California. So we're just super excited. But it's been an honor. And thank you so much for having me and allowing me to share my story on your platform.
Absolutely. I appreciate you coming on.